Hi, I'm Femi Oke. You're watching the stream. On today's episode, how bad is the economic crisis in Sri Lanka? Protesters continue to call for the resignation of Sri Lanka's government. And fuel prices are going up, food prices are going up. What happens when a country runs out of money? That is a question that you can ask on YouTube. Our comment section is live right now. You can put your comments, your thoughts into the comment section and be part of today's show.
Sri Lanka is in an unprecedented political and economic crisis where weeks-long protests across Sri Lanka have demanded for the resignation of President Gotabaya Rajapaksa, Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa, and a change in government and governance. These demands led to the mass resignation of the cabinet a few weeks ago and a new cabinet being appointed. But the demands remain that the president and the prime minister need to go home and there has to be a change.
Joining our conversation today, Manel, Harsha, Jahan. Good to have all three of you with us from Sri Lanka. Manel, please introduce yourself to our audience around the world.
Hi, I'm Manel Fernandez. I work as a correspondent for Al Jazeera here in Colombo, in Sri Lanka. But I've been in the media reporting on Sri Lanka for over 20 years now.
Thank you very much for bringing your expertise to us. Harsha, welcome back to the stream. Good to see you. Remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm Harsha De Silva. I'm a member of the main opposition in Sri Lanka.
Good to have you. And Jahan, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our international audience.
I'm Jahan Pereira. I'm the executive director of the National Peace Council, which is a peace-building NGO which focuses on addressing the issues of ethnicity and religion, which have divided our people for the last several decades, going back to independence and even beyond.
Looking forward to hearing more from you, Jahan. I'm just thinking, Harsha and Manel, how many protests have you been to in the last month? How prolific are they? Harsha, you start.
Well, actually, I'm taking a break today because we started a protest walk of 117 kilometers. And I actually walked 17 kilometers yesterday with about 8,000 people, and that's gathering momentum. And by the 1st of May, we probably would have 100,000 people congregating into the city asking for the resignation of the president and prime minister.
Manel, I know you've been reporting on these protests regularly. What can you tell us about the way they form, who is in them? What are people asking for?
I think they've been sort of building in terms of numbers, in terms of regularity. I've literally, for the last 2 or 3 weeks, almost every single day, been on the roads, been on the field, covering these protests, listening to what people have to say. So it's not just, like Harsha, political parties that are sort of leading marches. It is basically workers, private sector workers, there's fishermen, there are teachers, there are trade unionists from all sectors, there are health workers, and there are basically an amalgamation of ordinary citizens. There was another political party, the National People's Power Coalition, that also did a similar march for 3 days from down south. And there was a phenomenal crowd. And very much when you looked at those who had come, there were mothers, holding their two kids' hands with a backpack because they'd been walking for the 3 days. There were old, really old people who had probably become pensioners and were struggling given the current economic situation in the country. So that is the one sector of people. Then, of course, there's the ongoing sort of sit-in and demonstration and protests outside the president's office, which we're seeing in its 19th day. The people are not moving. It was, set up and talked about and tried to be sort of dissed by the government as, young people having fun. Some people described it as a beach party, but it's a 19-day beach party then. And the resilience of those young people is quite something to look at.
Jahan, I'm just thinking, as your executive director of the National Peace Council of Sri Lanka, are you seeing peaceful change happening because of these protests? Or do you predict that it will happen because of these protests peacefully?
Yeah, what has been quite remarkable about what's happening is the peacefulness, because and the involvement of youth in this, because most of those who are protesting and demonstrating from the civil society are youth, and they are the ones who have been leading the protests, especially the ones that Minel talked about outside the president's office. These young people, in the past, we saw them as sort of radicals and as violent, potentially violent. And we have had in our country two major youth insurrections by the Sinhalese, a Marxist type of insurrection that was one in 1971 and another one in 1988-89, and then the Tamil insurrection that took place. That also was led by young people. But this one, and they were very violent, but this one is extremely peaceful so far, despite the fact that there have been attempts to provoke violence. But basically the people involved in it have eschewed violence, and we are really very happy about this.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Jahan, trust journalists to find that the incident where there was a fuel protest and somebody died at that fuel protest. I'm going to bring Manel you in just a moment, because you reported on that death, that tragedy. First, let's hear a little bit of your reporting, and then please come off the back of it and help us understand in the context of the protest, is that an unusual situation that happened where that man died protesting about the fuel hikes? Let's have a listen, let's have a look.
Chaminder Lakshan was shot by police on Tuesday during a fuel shortage protest. A friend of the 42-year-old father of two explains what he saw.
I saw him running after trying to retrieve his bicycle. Then the policeman shot him. He fell on the ground, and then I saw the same policeman chasing people and firing. A senior officer was telling them to keep firing, and they did.
Lakshan was the family's main breadwinner. His wife Priyangani and two teenage children are in shock.
I'll be waiting till justice is done for what happened to my husband. I don't know if that'll happen, but it should someday, right? What happened to me mustn't happen to another person.
Yeah, so as you saw, I mean, that was the wife of Chaminder Lakshan, the victim who died due to police gunfire. Now, there had been a sort of a standoff, and for hours there were hundreds of protesters around a fuel station, basically in Rambukkana, where this incident happened. And they had been demanding fuel. They had been getting angrier and angrier. These were sort of daily voyage earners, people that needed fuel for their lorries. In fact, Chaminder Lakshan was a guy who ran a lorry. He hired it out. He used to take foliage and food to the close by elephant orphanage. So he needed that lorry moving. So for 4 days, apparently, his family tells us, he was waiting for fuel and he was unable to get it, which means obviously on the other end, he was not making a living for those 4 days. And ultimately, he and hundreds of people sort of surrounded this fuel station. They'd been promised that fuel was coming, that a Bowser was coming. Finally, when the Bowser came, it came late, and there was basically a fuel hike that within those few hours. And the people were really, really angry because they said, we've been waiting for so long, and this is very sort of, it seems to be on purpose, and they just want us to pay more for the fuel. So that kind of up tensions all the more. Police came in. The police spokesman tells us that the crowd was told several times to disperse. They didn't listen. Tear gas was fired. Mm-hmm. And then the police and the authorities have repeatedly claimed, and this is a claim that lots of the protesters have completely dismissed and rejected. The police say that there were protesters who were trying to set fire to the fuel bowser, which the protesters say, we've been waiting for it for so long. That's the last thing we want to do. And that's ultimately what happened with gunshots.
If I may jump in here, the police, according to reports, used 65 rounds of live ammunition. And they said they were using minimum force. Obviously, that cannot be minimum force.
I think the spokesman clarified and said it was 35 rounds, but it was still live rounds.
The main point I wanted to just really emphasize was, is this unusual? Because when I spoke to Jahan said that largely these protests are peaceful. It was just a tragic outcome for that man and his family And every life matters, obviously, of course. I'm not sure that that is how all of the protests are being viewed and treated by the police. Let me just move on.
Now, here, the problem here was that the police were the ones who were violent.
Exactly.
The people were not violent. The police were violent.
Good point.
And in fact, in a remarkable show of judicial independence, given the circumstances, the judiciary has now said that the police officers involved should be arrested, and they should be investigated.
Yes.
Now, I mean, what we feel is that there is an element within the government that in fact wants to provoke violence, and we see in some of the demonstrations that took place that there were acts of violence which are not clearly those of the demonstrators, but maybe from outside people coming in and committing those acts of violence.
Let's get back to the root of why people are actually protesting anyway, and that is because of the economic crisis. Food is scarce and expensive. Fuel is very expensive. We tried to get the finance minister of Sri Lanka to be on the program. We actually reached out to the current administration, and we tried really, really hard. We were very close. But as you can see, they didn't say yes. But I do have a comment here from the finance minister, Ali Sabri, who did a press conference recently, and he was saying sorry, apologising for the economic chaos that Sri Lanka is in right now. Have a listen.
Right now, what is important is to look after our people and restore their supply lines. And they don't deserve the kind of hardship they undergo. We all understand. It's heartbreaking for us to see that. And we have come here to find a solution to that. And again, I must apologize that we have to put them through these hardships. It's not only our problem. This has been an accumulation of the problems of the policies what successive governments in this country have done.
Harsha, I know you're up to date with these serious... Go ahead, Manal, go ahead.
That in context. That was the finance minister speaking actually from Washington, where he has been a short few days ago to have discussions with the International Monetary Fund about a bailout package. So he did that before he returned back to Sri Lanka.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. So there are talks with the IMF. The World Bank is going to give Sri Lanka some money. India has been helping Sri Lanka with money. China is negotiating loans. This is a very difficult situation that Sri Lanka is in, Harsha, right now. If you could explain it for the man on the street, what would you say to them?
I mean, it's funny that he says the people don't deserve it. I mean, who created this? You know, it's the trigger was two policy errors. One, cutting taxes, and then two, banning the import of chemical fertilizer that created this problem or the collapse. But as you said correctly, the big problem that we have now is to obtain some bridging finance. Yes, we have gone to the IMF. But to start receiving money from them on what's called an EFF or an extended fund facility, it'll take 6 to 7 months at the minimum, bare minimum. Until that time, we need to make sure that people have food to eat, medicine, and fuel, for which we don't seem to have sufficient funds. So, like you said, yes, we are reaching out to various countries, but I don't see money flowing in. India has helped us quite a bit. China has, on the other hand, said, look, we are not going to be restructuring the loans. And that's a conflict that has already got created between the government, the IMF, and the negotiators who will be appointed soon to talk to the bondholders. So one is that. The second issue, which is sort of a fairly complex situation in the banking system that needs to be immediately addressed. And after that, of course, we need to go into what's called a macro stabilization program.
Harsha, my eyes are glazing over. I want to know if I can go shopping and if there's food in the shops. But I do understand that there's a more complex situation that has to be worked out. This is what the part that I do understand. Harsha, do forgive me for jumping in, so make sure that everybody is staying up with you. If you have a look here, this is an Al Jazeera headline. Sri Lanka to suspend foreign debt payments. That means, Harsha, help me out, make sure that I've got this right, that a country can no longer afford to pay the foreign debts because they have to pay for food and fuel, important medicine, important goods that you need for your citizens in your country, rather than paying down your debt. Did I get that right, Harsha, before I move on?
Yes, you did. Okay. So we actually unilaterally suspended payment of both coupon and principal to all foreign creditors.
How bad is that, Harsha? On the level of 1 to 10, and 10 is disaster, where are we when you suspend?
We are 9. Because this is called a selective default.
Okay.
Because some payments would be made, meaning trade transactions would be settled. Only if banks are unable to meet trade transactions, we go from selected default to default, which would then create a further chaos because firms would not be able to purchase or import goods without paying cash up front.
Right, Harsha, this is very serious. I'm going to bring it down to grassroots level again, if I may. I'm going to bring in Razni Razik. Razni spoke to us a little bit earlier about the situation when you're going grocery shopping. What is available to you in Sri Lanka? I'm going to ask you, Jahan, to have a listen to Razni and then share your experiences as well as what is available, how difficult is it to survive right now in Sri Lanka? Here's Razni, first of all.
Basic necessities are very scarce. People are standing for long hours in queues, sometimes over days, to get gas, kerosene for cooking and fuel. Unfortunately, many people have died standing in these queues. In addition to that, there is a serious shortage of medicines. Groceries such as rice, flour, milk and sugar are not always available and are sold in limited quantities. We at Gas Station have been carrying out our crisis relief aid project for several weeks now, and our team members all around the country have been working relentlessly to provide these families with dry rations of essential goods.
Yeah, what I'd like to add to what Razni said is that the prices have virtually doubled, sometimes tripled, and people's incomes have not. In fact, people are losing jobs because of the downturn in the economy. Now, the major problem for the government, I mean, the real problem the government is facing in terms of the political thinking of people is that people think that the government leaders have stolen the money, that it is because they have stolen the dollars that we are facing this terrible foreign exchange crisis where we cannot buy our food, the food that we need for our children, the milk powder, the fuel, the cooking gas. They believe that it's the government that's responsible, and that's why they're also so angry, and they're not letting up on this, because they think this government leadership stole the money. And there's an element of truth in it, and also an element of exaggeration, because as Minel, I think, said earlier on, this is a cumulative, or rather the minister, this is a cumulative impact. It's come to us from the past. We have been living beyond our means. We fought a war for 3 decades, and our living standards didn't drop. We, in fact, at the end of the war, we became so-called upper middle-income country. Why? Because we were borrowing. And finally, the Ponzi came to an end where we couldn't repay. But it involves other previous governments, but the people are blaming this government and this leadership because of their profligate lifestyle, their wasteful, extravagant lifestyle, which people can see, and they believe they have stolen the money.
Minel, can I introduce somebody that we spoke to a little bit earlier? He's a veteran politician from the Sri Lankan political scene, Karu Jayasuriya. He says that the current administration, they are not being serious about how to fix the situation. Have a listen to Karu, and then give us a sense of how the people in Sri Lanka are assessing the current administration and what they want to happen. Minel, have a listen.
The situation in the country is fast deteriorating. Nobody, especially the government, not taking it very seriously because there is a power struggle at the moment. And this is costing the country quite a lot. On the other hand, we have a shortage of fuel and so many other things. So first we have to look at the food security, we have to look at the energy security, we have to also look at the medical security. Those things have not been addressed.
I think the government, for a long, long time, have had these sort of quick fixes. They've plastered over the cracks and then sort of soldiered on. And I think where Mr. Jayasuriya was also referring to was a little bit of that element, that they think they can make it up as they go along if they manage to secure and fix this problem, even with the IMF, with the bridge financing they're seeking from sort of friendly countries, from multilateral donors and all of that, that it will kind of tide over. As much as we had the finance minister, you know, making those comments that we heard, I think that is a factor that the former speaker was alluding to, that, you know, that they don't really, you know, they haven't really taken it seriously. And that is also a sort of a general sort of a feeling that this government is so interested in sorting its own sort of future, its political sort of stability out, that what's happening out to the man on the street is something that can be, sorted out and they can move on. So I think that is something that's of concern. Just to make one point in terms of one of your previous guests, in terms of the food shortages and things like that, I think we're not in a situation where people have reached starvation point, to be fair. It's not as if you go to the shops and the shops are empty. There are in an increasing number of people, obviously from the sort of the far more modest income groups, you know, daily wage earners, that are finding it very difficult to buy stuff, because sometimes things like milk powder, gas and what have you, you can just buy if you have, you're at the right place at the right time and you have the money. And that's been sort of costing more and more. But there are certain products, obviously, which the government needs to put on foreign exchange, yeah, like milk powder, like rice now. And things like that, which are becoming scarce.
I've got to squeeze in a little bit of YouTube, and then I'm going to go straight back to you, Harsha, because I know you've got some thoughts, and you can have the last thought in this show. So this is Prime Minister Rajapaksa. It's been muted by opposition parties in Sri Lanka that there should be constitutional change. So the president doesn't have so much power in appointing prime ministers, ministers, etc. And there is a push. The protesters are asking for the current administration to step down. How did the prime minister address this? Let's have a look.
No, I will not resign. Don't worry. I can be sacked, but I won't resign.
Harsha, I've got to share with you some thoughts from YouTube. So Kalana says, got to go home, talking about the current administration. Rajapaksa family has ruined Sri Lanka. The Rajapaksa family has so much to answer for. A lot of push there in our YouTube comments, asking for this family to step down, to resign. Harsha, will it happen?
Yes. Before that, I also want to make a comment about them not being serious, like Mr. Karu Jayasuriya mentioned.
Yeah.
Because this is pure incompetence plus arrogance of this government, who didn't understand the gravity of the problem. They were not serious. If they understood the problem, they could have resolved this much earlier, without, creating this absolutely horrendous situation for the people in this country. Now, the people are angry. They want all the Rajapaksas to go. Now, as the opposition, we have now got, I believe, sufficient numbers to bring in a no-confidence motion against the government, which means we can essentially unseat the Prime Minister.
I'm at the very end of this show, so I am just curious here, asking you to do a little bit of prediction. Manel, Harsha, Jahan, thank you so much for helping us with today's show. Harsha, when we come back to talk about Sri Lanka, when you come back on the stream, will there be a different administration? Yes or no?
It's a tough question to answer. but very likely there will be a different administration.
Very likely. Thank you, guests. Thank you on YouTube. I will see you next time. Take care.